the Nigel Morgan episode of the River Blast podcast. And Alex, River Blast, an appropriate name for these red hot Buccos. Obviously, the 11 game win streak came to an end yesterday at the hands of the Cleveland Indians, but the bats are red hot and the pitching is just as good.
Yeah, ESPN tweeted out that this was the first time since Ralph Kiner was a rookie that the Pirates had seven consecutive games where they scored at least six runs. I mean, I know the winning streak started with a couple, you know, strangler 3-2, 2-0 wins, but especially coming out of the gate in the second half, they were red hot, and it took Trevor Bauer, who is arguably the best pitcher in the American League this year, to finally slow him down, and even that was a Sunday lineup.
Yeah, I mean, you think about just that streak, and let's talk more about the home runs, especially in the Cleveland series. Those two games, I went to the games on Monday and Tuesday, and the home runs and that series, I mean, in Cincinnati, the same thing. They weren't just barely clearing the fence. I mean, they were bombs. 440-plus, it seemed like, every other one of them. Dickerson's shots in Cincinnati were no-doubters. And then Harrison's off Kluber on Monday. You know, Polanco, even your boy Josh Bell got in the mix there. Esrod had a bomb.
Esrod had two.
Two.
And so, a double.
Yeah, that's when Sean Rodriguez, who we also could name this episode after.
That's what I was thinking.
You know, I wanted to give Tony Plush a shout-out. So, when Esrod's coming up and hitting yabos, I mean, you know everything's going well. And that's everything was going well for this team. And still is. I'm like you said, this Bauer start against a lineup that had Stallings, Luplo, and Frazier for eight innings, no.
Yeah, you can't put too much stock into that.
Exactly.
Even then, they were rallying against good pitching. They rallied against Bauer in the seventh, and then
they forced him out.
And then Bauer and Simber in the eighth. It took a double play from Luplo, who I like his potential, but he is at best right now a quad A bat until he proves otherwise. I know he had a couple homers against the Brew Crew in that 5-game sweep. Overall, you have to like where the offense is at on one condition. And that's the second point that we're going to be bringing up right now. And that's the outfielder's health. Because Dickerson had those mammoth shots in Cincinnati, but he's dealing with a bum hammy for a little bit. Right now, it's day-to-day. He says it's mild, but it's still concerning. Starling Marte, it's the first time in his career he's hit seven home runs in a month, but he exited in the first inning in Wednesday's game with a hand contusion. Pirates are lucky that it's not a fracture, and, you know, that's, if he would have fractured his hand, not to sound like a pessimist, I would have said pack it in, the season's over.
Yeah.
They can't win without Starling Marte being 100%.
Marte has been MVP quality good during this streak.
Absolutely.
In the field, at the plate, on the bases, he has just been incredible all around. And
he legitimately might win player of the month.
Yeah,
this month.
Yeah, I would not be surprised at all. And, yeah, when that ball came up and hit him, I got incredibly worried because he's just meant that much to the team. And like you said, with Dickerson out, the contusion makes me feel a little better. But just taking one on the hand there, that's a problem. And it'll be interesting to see what the team does and how that decision is made, you know. Will he want to fight through it to try to keep this win, keep this winning going? Or will they err on the side of caution and put him on the disabled list? Because I think that decision, as you said, makes a big impact on the rest of the season.
Yeah, because we started this off, or last podcast we said that the Pirates brought themselves back into purgatory with that 5-game sweep of the Brew Crew. And we both came to an agreement that they need to go 8-2 before the deadline, and part of that was contingent on them going 5-1. 4-2 could have gotten the job done, but 5-1 to really cement yourselves is okay. We should at least think about buying, and they went 5-1 right now. So now they're kind of in this, okay, I guess we're buying. We're only 3 games back. I haven't checked the Rockies.
I believe it's 3.5.
Three and a half, pretty much the same difference. They've got a couple teams to still leapfrog over.
Yeah.
Marte needs to be a part of that. And if he's not going to be in the lineup every day, I don't know how much... Meadows is obviously the next guy up. And I don't know if he... He was a replacement-level player for the most part in his first stint, and that included that, you know, hot start coming off the... You know, coming out, and I know he had a lot of responsibilities being asked to play three outfield positions. That's tough on a kid. But if you go from Marte to Meadows, I don't think this team is competing anymore.
Yeah, but that's kind of a good point where I wanted to piggyback. It would have been nice to have Austin Meadows playing today. Whether if it was batting leadoff where Jordan Luplo was, you know, maybe, I hate playing the maybe game. But I like Austin Meadows coming to the plate with two runners on and one out in the seventh inning more than I like Jordan Luplo.
And or that's not to say... it was the eighth inning whenever there were two on, nobody out. You know who I like more than Meadows, though? Dickerson.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Dickerson's hurt.
I know. Yeah. This is...
That's what I... But my argument
Pirates
is...
Pirates very well might have won this game. You know, down by two, runners on first and second, nobody out.
Yeah.
Instead of it being Dickerson and Marte, it's Luplo and Frazier.
Yeah. Well, my point is... If Meadows is on this roster, which I think they could have made that move, being that they're, you know, have a three game series against an American League team, they could have worked him into the starting lineup in at least one of these games. He could have batted leadoff this game, or you could have had him on the bench to come in and play center field when Marte got hurt. And both of those spots in the order came up in critical times. And, you know, while Frazier had a big double, and, you know, I'm not giving up on Luplo or anything. We haven't seen enough of him. I would have liked Meadows to be in those situations. And that's where I kind of transition here to if there is going to be injury problems in this outfield. And I'm not even talking about either guy going to the disabled list. But because these guys have these little nagging injuries, is the move to... Is the best move for the Pirates to pull up Meadows and make him the fourth outfielder? Go back to rotating a little bit, because if they're not going to be able to go 100%, I'm fine with peppering a Austin Meadows start in.
Well, I think it's a little more acceptable now also because he's probably past the Super 2 deadline or rapidly approaching it. I mean, you don't want to make decisions based on money, but, you know, it's a couple days down in the minor leagues versus, you know, millions of dollars down the road, potentially.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're once they feel confident that they'll pass that mark, I think there's a no-doubter you have to call him back up. But until then, I don't know. It does really depend on the health of the outfielders. If either one is going to miss, say, any more than a start two at the absolute max, then you have to bring up Meadows again, I think.
So now, Alex... As the Pirates are, I confirmed it, 3.5, as we are recording this podcast at 11:15.
Like all great podcasts are recorded.
Yeah, ain't no rest for the wicked. As we record this at 11:15 on Wednesday night, the Pirates are 3.5 games back of the second spot in the National League wildcard race. They've won, 11 of their last 13? Or something like that.
12 or 14, I think.
12 or 14, something. Yeah. A ridiculous amount of games in a very short span. Has that been enough for this front office to make this team an official buyer at the deadline?
You want to take this one first? Because this is your story for Pirates Breakdown.
Yes, this is. So I did a little research. I wrote my story on Pirates Breakdown on... July 24th. So on July 24th, it's very interesting, actually. 2 years ago on July 24th, the Pirates were 51-47, and they were two games behind the Marlins for the second wild card spot. Last year on July 24th, they were 50-50, and only 2.5 games out of first place. This year on July 24th, a game that the Pirates won on that day, they entered that day before winning 52-49 and were four games out of the second wild card spot. So as of today, they're 3.5 back. And you take a look back in 2016, they were three games over 500, 2.5 back from the wild card. And last year they were two games under 500 at this time going into Thursday, assuming this is, you know, being listened to on Thursday. They were two games under 500, but still four back in the NL Central. So they were pretty much in the same spot in the last 3 years around this time as far as being 3 to 4 games out of the postseason. In the last 2 years, being 3 to 4 games out, even as close as two games out of a playoff spot, was not enough to make this team a buyer. And I'll go back all the way to 2016 here to make my first point. 2016, the mentality of Pirates baseball was nowhere near as pessimistic as it is now by anyone. In 2015, they won 98 games. A lot of people thought that team was good enough to win a World Series. Because they were, exactly. And then in 2016, despite, you know, losing some key pieces, they had that good start in 2016. And then they went into the All-Star break. I believe they were three games over 500. And they were kind of floating around. But I believe the reason this front office has been so conservative in the last three seasons is because they put it all on the table. From 2011 to 2015, they went out and got guys every single year. 2011, Derek Bell and Ryan Ludwig. 2012, they got Wandy Rodriguez. 2013, they get Marlon Byrd and Justin Morneau. I can keep going. Every year, they go out and get guys to address their biggest areas they needed help in. But after getting burned big time in 2014 and in 2015 in their home park in a one-game wild card, I feel like this team just said, we're done trading prospects to just risk it all to play a one-game playoff. And that's what you saw in 2016 when they, instead of, you know, when they're only three games out of a wild card, a team that had Gerrit Cole on it, that had Andrew McCutchen on it, who, you know, both were underperforming that year. But they had talent on that team, but instead they elected to be sellers. They traded Melanson, which in the end ended up being a good move. But many people wanted them to be buyers. Many people wanted them to be buyers last year when Polanco went down in Colorado, when they were one game over 500, two games back of the division. But that wasn't enough for them to become believers. So, is this year different? Is this year different? Does this 11-game win streak change anything from their past standards? Does maybe the lack of attendance change anything from their past standards? Do they feel more pressure now to add? Or is it the same old thing? Do they have to be within two games to make a move?
I think this year's different for a couple reasons, and the first is you brought it up with Mark Melanson, and I'm going to throw the Tony Watson for O'Neill Cruz trade also.
Mm-hmm.
Both of those cases, the Pirates had someone who was perceived as, Melanson perceived as an elite reliever, and Watson viewed as, you know, one of the best lefties available at the time. And they were two guys that the Pirates realized they were not going to re-sign, and they wanted to play it safe and cash out there while making a simultaneous kind of move. They brought in Ivan Nova in 2016. They brought in Joaquin Benoit in 2017, you know.
They also brought back, who did they, or no, they got rid of John. They brought back Bastardo, didn't they?
In 2016 those, for yeah. John Neese in my, let me trade you my nuclear waste for your, your fiery garbage.
Yeah. That was a very good analogy right there.
Yeah, I don't know which player was which.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there isn't that case right now. You could argue that maybe Jordy Mercer, since he has 2 months of control remaining, you know, but there's no market for shortstops right now. You could get Iglesias or Freddy Galvis, you know, or for the same
Scooter
price.
Scooter Gennett. If you're willing to pay a little bit more.
Yeah, I did some reading on the Scooter Gennett. I think that might have been just a pipe dream because apparently they're close to an extension or something.
There's darn red.
Oh, jeez. Oh, shucks. Kicks a can. I think that makes it different. I will also go with the asterisk that last year is the best example because the Pirates were hot at this point last year also. And
7 out of 8 out of the deadline, or after the All-Star break. They won 7 of their first 8 games.
Which the Pirates very realistically could do again this year.
Including a 4-game sweep over the Brewers, I might add. So very similar.
Very, very, very similar situation right there. And they opted not to. I don't think that was the right choice back then. Even back then, I was saying, guys, you know, J.D. Martinez is going for nothing. Curtis Granderson, Melky Cabrera. It was a very clear need in the outfield that they needed somebody. Not only for the stretch run, but if you go to the playoffs, Starling Marte wouldn't be available for that. Getting an outfielder made clear sense. And I feel like whenever they got rid of Watson and brought in Benoit, that sent a bad message to the clubhouse.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you why they didn't make a move last year. And it was because they said, we're two games out of the division. And we have to catch the Brewers. But the team in between the Brewers and the Pirates was the Chicago Cubs.
Yeah.
And they said, they basically were intimidated. And that's kind of a microcosm of the Pirates' little brother relationship with the Cubs, both on the field and in the front office.
Cubs and the Cardinals.
Yeah, they looked at the Cubs and they said, well, they're going to go get somebody. And they did. And they just said, we're not going to be able to get a guy like the Cubs are going to get. And they're eventually going to heat up, which they did. And they're going to win this division. And we're not willing to go out and make a move and try to race and keep up with the Chicago Cubs. So they waved the white flag before, you know, no pun intended, because they waved the flag in Chicago. They waved the white flag and surrendered. They yelled uncle before the Cubs could really even bury them.
Yeah, I know. They did.
Mm-hmm.
But
and are they going to do that again this year with the Diamondbacks? Or the Braves or the Rockies?
There are a lot of teams in that cluster for that second wild card right now. And the Pirates are only 3.5 back, but, you know, so the Rockies, they're right in the mix. The Diamondbacks are right in the mix. The Brew Crew and the Braves, I'm not convinced that Atlanta's going to, you know, stick the landing
here.
Two
of those four teams are going to fall off.
I don't think Atlanta makes the playoffs.
No.
I think Milwaukee does. So there's really, realistically, one wild card up for grabs. I think that might, you know, surprise some people I'm still high on Milwaukee.
That was my whole idea on it, is two of those four teams, if you want to throw the Pirates in it, three of those five teams, they're going to fall off. Obviously, two teams are going to be left standing. But I think, two of them are going to finish the season, like, below 500, I believe, or close to it. And then you're going to have that one team that kind of stays relevant, but then two of them are going to run away with it. I think I'm high on both of the teams in the West, more than Milwaukee and Atlanta.
Colorado and Arizona.
Arizona, yeah.
We're just giving the division to the Dodgers, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Well, Colorado, they made that deal today for a reliever also,
yeah.
Didn't they?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean,
everyone's
like,
and this
that
is this
well
is
known,
the thing.
But
they can't sit around and let everyone get better and just stay the same.
They can't. And there are cheap. We're gonna talk about this also. We got a whole trade deadline, mm-hmm. you know, segment next.
Teaser.
But we're also just talking about the second wild card, which is to play a one game playoff on the road. And just look at some of these players that are hanging around right now. The Pirates are handling Milwaukee this year. That's why they're, you know, still in playoff discussion.
Mm-hmm.
So even if you're not intimidated by Milwaukee, are you intimidated by Colorado's bullpen and their offensive firepower if you're playing in Colorado? Are you intimidated by the Diamondbacks?
I'm intimidated by the Diamondbacks.
The Diamondbacks are, they're a sleeper. They're a sleeping giant.
Yeah.
I mean, Gold.
I mean, they've owned us this year also. They're,
yeah.
I think, 6-1 against us.
Goldie's been one of the best players in baseball.
And, you know, their rotation's good.
And
you
have to go up against Greinke.
Or Shelby Dunk. Or what's his name?
Robbie Ray?
No, who's their other pitcher? Not Shelby Duncan. Oh, my God.
You look that up. I'll riff for you. Don't worry.
Holy cow. This is bad.
Even in the East, could you imagine? We haven't even talked about the Giants. They're hanging around also.
Yeah.
And the Phillies could go down to a wild card spot. Imagine in the year of our Lord 2018 going up against a one-game playoff against either Madison Bumgarner or Jake Arrieta.
Patrick Corbin.
Patrick Corbin.
Oh, man. All right, sorry.
I should have known that.
Yeah.
But right now, I don't know if the Pirates, they shouldn't sell the farm. And we're going to talk about this, like we said. They shouldn't sell the farm, but there are some smart, very simple upgrades because they have to prove to the fan base that they weren't just BSing. That if they were in a position to add, make the team better in 2018, compete for a playoff spot, yes, they traded Cole, yes, they traded McCutcheon, but they did not punt this year away. This 2016 was still a bridge year. 2017 was just a bad experiment. This is still a team that can compete.
And that's a good way to wrap this up, Alex, and that's what I was going to conclude my point with. A wild card, a second wild card spot did not mean that much. I mean, it meant a lot because obviously you always want to win. Yeah. But that was, at that time, it wouldn't have been the end of the world for the team to miss the playoffs because there was still a lot of hope. But making the playoffs this year will change a lot of fans' opinions on the future of this organization.
Losing the wild card in 2018 would be a positive, where
yes.
back in 2015, like a season overall positive, 2015 it was an unbelievable failure.
It would be looked at as a miracle
yes.
if this team made the playoffs. For some fans. For some fans coming into this year who expected this team to lose 90 games.
100 games.
100 games. For this team to make, not even make the postseason, but be relevant until the final week of September, where we're switching between the Steelers and the Pirates, seeing, are they going to make it? Are they going to make it? And if they do, that's amazing. If not, but if they can make a move that would help this team play relevant baseball until the final week of the season, that will fill their ballpark. And we all know Bobby Boy loves his money. We all want those tickets to go up, right? Those ticket sales, that will put people in the seats. And that will wrap up our first part of the show. We're going to move into our trade talk here on the River Blast Podcast. All right, Alex, we've been waiting a while to do this. We've kind of teased it in our first two episodes. We wanted to save it for when it was most relevant. The people, they're calling for it, and we are men of the people. We named this podcast after what the people said we should have named it. So let's talk about it. Trade talk here. We have less than a week to see if the Pirates are going to be buyers or sellers. We hope that they will be buyers. I don't think they're going to be sellers. Unless they lose these three games.
They have to really...
They have to get swept by the Mets.
Pretty much.
Yeah. If they get swept by the Mets, which, you know, just quit the season, I guess, at that point.
Yeah.
Which will be the mentality.
Yeah.
But we're going to assume that this team is in buy mode. That's what a couple of reports have said. There's been, you know, the Pirates' name has been connected to a few guys, which is a little exciting. So we're going to assume this team is in buy mode right now. And so we're going to give some trade scenarios. Alex, let me ask you first. Let's talk about what we're going to give up. That's always been the hot button topic when we're talking about trades. When the Pirates, anytime the Pirates have been in buy mode, it's always, what prospects are the untouchables? Great movie, by the way.
It's all right.
We'll talk about that later. Anyway, the untouchables. Who are your untouchable guys in this farm system?
Well, the most obvious one is Mitch Keller. I'm not as high on Mitch as a lot of people are. I think I see a lot of problems with his game that, you know, people are looking through rose-tinted glasses, and whenever you do that, you don't see the red flags.
Mm-hmm.
He can't control the running game. He's a fastball, change-up, curveball guy like every, you know, player the Pirates draft out of high school, which, you know, didn't work for Glasnow. It didn't work for Tyon until they started adding sliders. It didn't work for Kingham until he started adding a slider. So I have some reservations with him, but the potential is sky high. I can't trade him under any circumstance.
No.
I cannot trade Kevin Newman either because I don't think his ceiling is as high, but I don't view Jordy Mercer or Josh Harrison as parts of the middle infield for next year. I need a rookie to throw in there. I think he is the most logical solution.
He's more ready than Cole Tucker.
He is more ready than Cole Tucker.
Or even Kevin Kramer.
Even though I'm high on Tucker, he has not had a good season in Double A.
Yeah.
He's kind of...
He's only, what, how old is Tucker? Like 22?
Yeah, ish.
Yeah. So
he was drafted out of high school a couple years ago. So.
Yeah. So.
And my third guy might be a little bit of a surprise. It's Taylor Hearn. Because Taylor is... I love the fastball. I think his floor is Tony Watson with extra mustard on his stuff. It's so good. And if he can somehow develop that third pitch and become a you know, major league starter. My goodness, could he be deadly in a rotation.
You talked about, sidebar real quick here, you talked about how you want Glasnow to be the Pirates kind of, I'm not going to say the guy from the Brewers. We don't want anyone like
no,
that.
No, no, no. But, the fireman.
Yeah, the fireman, the Andrew Miller, that kind of player. I would love to see Taylor Hearn be developed as that guy.
I would love that.
Pull him up early in AAA and just, you know, throw him in any bullpen scenario you can for the next year and a half. And you have You have Vasquez and Hearn, two guys that you got in that deal. They both could be all-star quality bullpen guys.
Especially if you don't make Hearn have to be your, you know, closer.
Yeah.
Which, with Vasquez and Crick, pretty much hopefully cemented as, you know, the closer and setup man of, you know, the next couple of years, you know, maybe they could get creative or more incentive to be creative. Who are your untouchables?
All right, I got a list.
All right.
Mitch Keller. That's it.
That's wow.
Well, here's my thing. Here's my thing. Just because Mitch Keller is my only name does not mean I'm willing to just give away Ke'Bryan Hayes or Austin Meadows or Kevin Newman.
I need to be wild.
Your point on Newman was spot on with how you don't think Mercer is the future. You know, he's not going to be around here much longer. Josh Harrison's not going to be around here much longer. Cole Tucker's not ready to come up. Kevin Kramer, probably a decent second baseman, maybe a decent third baseman, definitely not a shortstop. Jung Ho, who knows? and so,
that's
yes,
a nice way of putting it.
Newman
yeah.
is the future at shortstop. I do get that. However, if we can get a shortstop with a little bit of control, I'm willing to throw Newman in that deal to give Cole Tucker some time to develop, because it's not like Newman is the only shortstop we have in the farm system. We have O'Neill Cruz, too, who...
He's probably going to have to move to third, though.
I mean, maybe. Who knows? I mean, maybe he picks up his defensive game knowing that, you know, Newman is out of the picture and he's only got to beat out Cole Tucker in the future. Who knows? He's only 19. I'm not really writing him off anywhere in any scenario yet. But that's my point is... I'd be willing to trade Newman because of guys beneath him. If we could get someone who could hold down that spot for 2 years on this major league team and do better than Jordy Mercer is doing now. That's a scenario where I'd trade Newman. I would trade Meadows in a scenario because at the end of the day, we both declared Jordan Luplow as a worthy fourth outfielder, potential worthy fourth outfielder. You have two very good minor league prospects in your outfield right now, and Reynolds and Martin. You know, I have belief in both of them that they could be solid ball players at the major league level in a couple years. So Meadows is expendable. Now, I'm not going to go giving Austin Meadows away for a relief pitcher. Alex, we would need a new co-host for this podcast. Alex would die.
Yes.
So, but if we could, you know, maybe... use Austin Meadows in a package deal to bring an ace with a couple years of control or, you know, a legitimate power bat to play in the middle infield. I would listen to an offer that involved Austin Meadows because I'm not against the idea of extending Dickerson a couple of years and continuing to have this outfield of Dickerson, Martin, Polanco bat 1, 2, 3 in my order right now. After watching this team play with that as their top three batters, I'm not in any hurry to let any of those guys go. You know, and Dickerson's not some old guy. He's been in the league a little bit, but he's been in the league as long as Marte has. And, you know, no one's calling Marte old. So, yeah, I'm fine with extending Dickerson a couple years until you give guys like Reynolds and Martin time to develop if you can flip Meadows for someone with a couple years of team control, which people would be interested. Austin Meadows is a name you throw down on the table, and other teams will listen. Maybe not a one-for-one guy, but pretty darn close to it. So, yeah, I'm willing to give him up. Ke'Bryan Hayes might be the second person on my list. Because, you know, if Moran doesn't work out, I think Ke'Bryan has potential, but you see... You know, you see prospects do things, you know, when they're winning awards like Prospect of the Month or when they do well in the Futures game. That as dumb as it sounds, I do believe that that does increase their trade value around this time of the year because their name's out there a little bit more. And he could be another name that we could probably get a little bit more if his name's involved with it, which I'd be fine with. So, yeah, Mitch Keller, only guy, do not touch for the exact same reasons you said. His ceiling is just too high. He's got so much potential.
I just wanted to give one addendum to my Newman thought. No one's going to be really into Jordy Mercer, I think, in this offseason. So they probably could re-sign him to a one-year deal.
There's no point.
Yeah. They could sign him to a one-year deal this offseason if you really think Tucker will be ready in 2020. And, you know, a deal can only go through. They only want Newman. They don't want anyone else besides Newman. So they could do that. But if someone was going to make that potential deal, what is your biggest area of need do you think the Pirates have right now? If you could only upgrade, if you could only make one trade, not even talking about the players, but if you could only upgrade one position, what is it?
I want an ace. I want an ace.
An ace is going to cost you Mitch Keller.
An ace could cost me Austin Meadows and Ke'Bryan Hayes, and we can find a way around it, hopefully. I want, and I'm not saying like a Jake DeGrom, but a Chris Archer. I want someone who we can trot out there in the one-game playoff that we're fighting to be a part of. Because there's not, I mean, Tyone maybe. But Tyone on a playoff team is at best a two-starter right now. I want a guy who can start a playoff series for me. Be it a one-game wild card, be it the NLDS, be it the NLCS, or the World Series. Whatever, you know, postseason competition I'm in, I want a guy, and that, like, again, it doesn't mean we need to trade for Jake DeGrom or, like, the best pitcher available, but a Chris Archer would be the best pitcher on this staff. A Jay Happ might be the best pitcher on this staff. I think he would be.
Probably.
Yeah, a guy with a little bit more experience than someone on this roster, in the pitching staff especially. You know, I don't want to trot Nova out there. He doesn't like running as it is. So, yeah, I would like to have a number one starter. Maybe not a renowned ace, but someone who would be our ace. A guy that we would have a fighting chance with if we make it to this one-game playoff that we're so desperate for. Alex, what's your biggest area of need?
Mine's up the middle.
Yeah.
Either shortstop, which, like I said, there really isn't any market now that Machado's off, you know, gallivanting in Los Angeles. So the next one would be second base. I know I brought up Scooter Gennett, and, you know, the Reds are going to hang on to him because they hate fun, they hate the trade deadline, and they hate America. But another guy who I have long been infatuated with is Brian Dozier. I think he would be a perfect fit right up the middle. He usually does produce in the second half of the season.
That was what I was going to say. He's about to flip the switch, as he does every single year around this time.
Mm-hmm. You could give Jay Hay some, you know, more days off and have him, you know, at third base more, which would be, I think, an upgrade over Moran,
and Josh,
at least
Harrison,
defensively.
Josh Harrison was such a weapon for those playoff teams.
As a utility
guy. As a super utility guy. And, like, you see the Cubs use Zobrist that way in 16, and they use Baez that way, too. And you saw the Royals use Zobrist that way.
Yeah.
And the Rays use Zobrist that way. I mean, that's how Ben Zobrist is always. But, you know, having a guy like that on your roster where you can plug him in and you can get him four starts a week in three different positions, but then when someone goes down at third base, say Moran gets hurt, or we trade for Dozier, he gets hurt, or, you know, whoever, an outfielder gets hurt, you can plug in Josh Harrison and you can have a good enough replacement, a solid player to plug into that lineup as opposed to trotting out a rookie while you're trying to compete for the postseason spots. So, yeah, I love a move that puts Harrison back to his super utility role. I'm sure he wouldn't love that.
No, but
you can't show loyalty
to a player who's going to be gone in 2 months.
Well, that, and he said,
whenever you're legitimately trying to win.
I remember a couple months ago, not a month, it was about a month ago, I asked him, I said, do you want to stay here? And he said, I want to be somewhere where we're winning. Winning changes everything. Obviously, things aren't, you know, the happiest right now. It was when they were like 8 games under .500. He said this. And he said, winning changes everything. I want to be somewhere where we're winning. And they're winning. And I'm sure he's happy. I'm sure that whole clubhouse is happy.
Mm-hmm.
And Josh is a guy that, though I'm I'm confident he loves playing in one spot every single day. Josh wants to win. Josh is a gamer. If you watched him play baseball one day, you would know that. And I know you know that. You know, he gives everything he has. And he wants to win, and he'll do whatever it takes. And he would understand that move, I think. So, real quick, Alex, as we wrap up our trade talk, is Dozier your dream name?
Dozier is my dream name.
All right, I'm gonna give mine, and then we're going to have our first ever guest come on and give his. My dream name would be Chris Archer, and then we're going to bring in Billy Yinzer off the street here to come in. Here, Billy, come on in here.
Billy, you've put on weight.
Yeah, I want to bring Jay Happ back in here. He left town a couple years ago, and it wasn't good. Them nothing, spend nothing, get nothing, win nothing. We're going to bring him back, and we're going to win the World Series. So, yeah, let's bring Jay Happ back here, and we'll trade Meadows and Keller, and let's get Kutch back, too. Yeah, we'll bring those two back. We're going to win it all. All right, thanks, Billy, and thank you all for putting up with that. We're going to move on to our segments. All right, Alex, it is time for some segments here to wrap up the show. First segment we're going to get into, as always, buy, sell, trade. I'm going to start this one. I'm excited about these. First thing I'm buying is 14 Twitter followers for our man, Richard Rodriguez. We are this close, people, to getting Rich Rod over 100.
That's the River Blast bump.
Can we do... That's the River Blast difference right there. That's what we need to see. What was he at? He was at 69 when we started the show, episode 2, right?
I think so.
So we got him 15 more. We need 14 more, people. We need 14 more. Can we do it?
Your math's not checking out there, but...
You know, I'm not a math guy. I've expressed this.
Okay.
You're the numbers guy. I know how to record podcasts in a nice studio. That's all I got. Yeah, my math was way off. Yes, we're selling my math. And in addition to selling math, we're going to sell some tickets, Alex. Yeah, now Bargain Bob's listening now because... We're going to sell some tickets because this four-game series against the Mets, and then we got the Cardinals or the Cubs after that, and then I believe the Cardinals coming into town. We got a lot of games at home, and I better see some butts in the seats. I don't care how you get them. You can get them off the Pirates website. You can get them off a second-party market. You can get them off of Billy Yinzer, who just left the building, and you know, buy them down on the south side or on the north shore. You can get them on Craigslist, wherever you want to get them. People need to come and support this team because they were counted out by everyone this entire year. They played fun baseball in the beginning. They hit the lowest point of the season, and they fought back. Now they're over 500. They're playing relevant baseball at the most exciting time of the year to be doing so, right around their trade deadline. And I don't care what your feelings are for Bob Nutting or Neil Huntington or anything. You cannot have any problems with the guys on these rosters. You cannot have any gripes. They have given everything they have, and you need to go out and support this city's ball club because they've earned your support. I want to see full stands, and I think we're going to see it because I believe in this town. I believe in this sports town. I think we're going to see a packed baseball stadium cheering on the Pirates, taking on these Mets this weekend, and it's going to be great. And last thing I'm trading is hot dog racers. They're a disgrace. I wanted to see the pierogies come, Stone Cold Steve Austin style entrance, just walk in there, like drop the music, and then just drop some stunners on these. Ketchup's the only one with any kind of potential that would ever succeed in a big market like Pittsburgh or Milwaukee. Some real racers, DC, these Cleveland Indians racing hot dogs, they're a joke, and I'll take that to the bank. Alex, what's your buy-sell trade?
Wow, what a surprise. The ketchup being a hit here in Pittsburgh.
Oh, dude, I put ketchup on everything. Weirdest thing you put ketchup on, Alex?
I usually just put ketchup on hot dogs.
Oh.
I'm boring.
I dip my toast in ketchup.
Wow.
All right, keep going.
Wow.
Keep going.
Okay,
keep going.
I'll try
keep
to
going.
Regroup after that right. One. That one caught me off guard. I am buying S-Rod's swing right now. you know, coming off
the
DL.
Wow, all right, we're back at it.
Yeah, we're right back
at it. It's a tennis match of hot takes right now.
I'm not going to say, you know, 2016 Estrade's back, but if you look at where he was in June in the swing, where it was in Cincinnati, you know, the leg kick, he's cut down, he has better control of the lower half of his body. It looks good. It looks good. It's no surprise that I know Cincinnati's pitching's not that great, but that he was able to drive, you know, a bunch of balls in Cincinnati, you know, the two home runs and the double. I think Sean Rodriguez, good utility player, is back. Good utility bench player is back. It may be, I don't know if this whole season will end up being, you know, a positive that they did hang on for him for now, but hey, you know what? He's here now. I think he'll be a net positive going down the stretch. So I'm buying his bet. But you know whose bet I'm selling? Ivan Nova's. He broke that 0 for 63, God. And he's not going to. That's it. That's his
Sell
hit of the
that
year,
on
everyone.
eBay.
Enjoy
that's
it.
That's his hit of his life. I've never seen a guy look like he does not enjoy playing the game of baseball.
Did you ever see that video of, I think it was Liriano back in 2014?
Oh, yeah, where he does not.
He does not run and very reluctantly walks to first base, and the AAA guys are throwing it all over to right field and back. And he,
yeah.
Against all his wishes, makes it to first base. Oh, I felt bad for the guy.
Yeah, and Nova stinks in the field. He stinks at the plate. That guy just wants to throw a baseball.
He pitches like he's double parked.
Yeah.
That's my favorite analogy. Yeah. That. He's like, hey, it's got to be a fastball. Try to hit it.
Yeah.
Three pitchers or less. Let's go.
Mm-hmm. Punch stream.
And my trade is the Pirates have been connected to Texas Rangers pitcher Keon Keller. I'm trading that. I don't want... You know, Kella, I want a different Rangers pitcher named Jake Diekman. Lefty, over the last 2 years, has basically given the exact same production as Zach Britton.
Oh.
He's store brand Zach Britton.
Oh.
I like it. I think he's a guy who they could get on the cheap. Clay Holmes, I think, would be a decent turnaround.
Really?
Yeah. And Diekman, I think you could get cheap on a 1 or 2 year deal in return. So you get that, you know, years of team control, you know, backwards. You know,
let me ask you this. What if they wanted to go... I mean, I know they wouldn't do this because he's like a free agent next year, I'm pretty sure, but Rich Rod for your guy.
No.
No?
No.
Okay.
I'm just doing this because the bullpen would be my second area need, and I am very strongly against trading top prospects for relief pitchers.
Mm.
But this is the guy who I think is pennies on the dollar worth exploring.
Okay. All right, so... we both have a former Pirate of the Week. I'll let you give yours first.
Yeah, my guy is Zach Duke. He's showing up in trade rumors over the... Because, you know,
man.
Lefty...
Bring him back. Bring him back.
Yeah, I would 100%
home.
Be on...
I'm board. Coming home. A tribute video would be wonderful.
My Zach Duke story back in... when was he a rookie? 2006 or 2007?
I believe 06.
Okay.
Yes, 06.
06, okay. I convinced
we could be wrong.
I convinced my dad back in whenever he was a rookie, like late August, early September of that year, the Houston Astros came to town and it was the Rockets, you know, one of his, it was going to be the last time he ever pitched in Pittsburgh.
Oh yeah.
And it was like, Dad, come on, it's Zach Duke versus, you know, Roger Clemens.
The pitching match of the century.
In Pittsburgh it was. I think people don't really give Duke credit for how exciting he was that rookie year.
Oh, he was
lights I really,
out.
I was...
I had his jersey.
I had his jersey.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
Yeah.
We don't buy jerseys.
I was really
Niles
excited
household.
About this kid, and you know, it's Roger bleeping Clemens. You gotta see this guy pitch live, you know? That'd be one of those things I'd regret, you know, down whenever I'm in my 50s, you know. It's like, that was a great game. I'd love to see Zach, you know, come back again.
Yeah, that'd be cool. I have another lefty that I would like. I mean, he's not on the trade block, surprisingly, because he's played for approximately 46 Major League Baseball teams, it seems, over his 30,000-year career. Oliver Perez. We saw Ollie come in for relief through a scoreless fourth inning on Tuesday. Just insane that this guy is still in the major leagues. You want to talk about trade deadline moves? I remember crying when they traded Brian Giles.
Brian Giles for him and Jason Bay.
Yes, and that
Boy,
was a
that
heck
turned out, that turned
of
out
a
to
return.
Be a great trade.
I mean, that was a good return for the Pirates, I think. I mean,
that's
they,
a fantastic return. That's the best trade David Littlefield ever made.
Yeah, I mean, that they got a Rookie of the Year in Bay, and Perez's rookie year was almost, you know, he was almost Rookie of the Year himself. Like, he was really good. And then he kind of fell off as a starter.
Yep.
They tried to change him a little bit.
Broke
but
12-year-old Alex's heart.
I mean, he found success with the Mets, and then he's been bouncing around. He's been with the Nationals. He's been all over the place. And the fact that this guy's still pitching relevant baseball, I mean, he's probably going to pitch in October this year. There's a chance that Zach Duke pitches in October, too. How crazy is that? Two best lefties of our childhood.
Wow.
What's Paul Mahalem doing? Where's he at?
He's probably making a commercial for like a used car lot or something.
I have no idea.
This is going to make me sound like I'm, you know, 50-something years old. I was 12 at the time. My parents, the house I grew up in did not have cable TV, so I didn't get to watch the Pirates. You know, watching them was, you know, a real treat.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a bedtime of like 9:30 at 12 years old, you know.
I mean, that's probably why you grew up a lot smarter than me.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's why I can do basic math.
Well, that and the fact that you didn't go to Burgettstown. But anyway, continue. Yeah.
I have like the, you know, mid-50s, you know, having a like portable radio.
I had one of those. Yeah, I have that.
And you'd have it near, you know, listening to Ollie pitch. That's great stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I remember, listening to...
I was 12 at the time. I think I should really make that clear. I'm not, you know, 50-something years old
a lot
of people.
Like Lanny Fritteri
was
still in the callback then. I was listening
to Lanny, not Bob Prince.
Yeah. You know, and yeah, I remember that when the West Coast games, mm-hmm. when they're starting at 10 o'clock, you know, your parents think you're asleep. Yeah, I remember that. And Ollie was my guy, too. I loved Oliver Perez. One of my earliest PNC Park memories I talked about a little bit, I don't know if I talked about it on this podcast, I think I talked about it on The Fan, was a doubleheader against the Brewers, who were in first place in 03. And in the first game, Perez was dealing. He was like a rookie, but I think he had like 12 strikeouts. Then Tony Gonzalez or Tony Anderson, it was Tony somebody, who's a rookie, hit a grand slam, and Jack Wilson hit an inside the park home run. That was all in the first game, and then Jason Bay drove in 8 runs in the second game. And that's like one of my favorite Pirates fan memories ever. So, yeah, that was awesome. That was awesome, and Oliver Perez started that game, and that's when he actually taught me the baseball superstition, never touch the white line when you're a pitcher coming off the field. He always did like a little hop. So, yeah. That's our Oliver Perez talk.
Completely unrelated, but you just said that and reminded me. Do you remember Josh Fogg?
Dude, buddy, do I remember Josh Fogg?
How could you forget Josh Fogg? Josh Fogg was the guy who I learned that superstition through, but because he blatantly defied and like made a giant swipe of it every single time. It's like, there, I pitched 6 innings today, 6 swipes on third base.
Yeah. So those are our former Pirates of the Week. Alex, do you have a meaningless stat of the day?
Meaningless, yeah, sure.
Meaningless. We'll say special stat.
But I'd rather go with meaningless.
Okay.
We're going by outfielder OPS.
Okay.
Collective. 820 is a pretty darn good OPS. The Pirates did that in April as a collective for the outfield. In May, they did it as well. And going into play went against the Indians on Wednesday. Lost what day this was, their OPS was 1.030. So they have a very, very good chance of being over 820 again. Never before since the Pirates have had a dream outfield, you know, in 2012, have they had 3 months where the outfield had an OPS of 820 or higher. So that, and they've still got 2 months to go. They could do it, you know, 4 or 5 times.
You're dang right. All right, give me a bold prediction for this week as we wrap up the show and head into the trade deadline.
The Pittsburgh Pirates make a trade. They buy someone.
Okay.
I'll go with someone, anyone. I think that's bold enough right now.
Okay. I'll say, off the counterpoint, and I don't want to end on a negative note, so I have a good idea as to how we're going to end the show legitimately, but I'm going to say either Marte or Dickerson goes on the disabled list. That's my bold prediction. I hope I'm wrong.
See, I thought you were going to be like, they don't make a trade to bounce off of mine.
And you know, that might not be the end of it. They might have enough faith in Meadows where they still do make a move. Or they might learn from last year where they didn't make a move to replace Polanco's spot when he went down. Who knows? But, yeah, I think that one of them is going to go on the DL. I don't know who. Probably Marte would be my guess, but I hope I'm wrong. So to end the show, Alex, this is two shows in a row where I had bad math. I want you to rattle off a couple times tables to prove to these people that I'm not as dumb as I sound.
1, 4, 9, 16, 25. I'm just going by squares, and you can, you know, go off whenever you want. 36, what? 49,
I want you to ask me times
81.
Tables.
Oh, okay, okay. 8 times 7.
56. Give me a couple more.
Okay. 3 times 11.
33.
9 times 4.
36. And that's the show, baby.
3 for 3, baby.
3 in a row. We could go 11 in a row like the Pirates did, but we know I'm automatic when it comes to my times tables.
Okay.
Just not adding or, you know, getting dates right. But that's, I don't sweat the small stuff. For Alex Stump, I'm Noah Hiles saying thank you for listening to another episode of the River Blast podcast. Go ahead, give us a follow on Twitter. Alex is at Alex J. Stump on Twitter. I am at Noah_Hiles95. Thank you all for tuning in. Tune into the Bucks. They've earned it. They've earned our respect. They deserve
it. Go to the game.
Go to the game. Have some fun. It's going to be a beautiful weekend. I don't actually know that. I haven't even looked at the weather. Alex and I will be there. If you tweet at us, we'll come pay you a visit this weekend. That's
absolutely
a promise. If you listen to our show and you tweet at us, we will come pay you a visit this weekend. That's a promise. We want to see you there. We want to see the Bucks make a move. Let's do it. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.